And Rabbi Vefer, I have some questions for you today about food, a question most Jews are very interested in. Now, when I started learning about Shabbat, I learned that you were obliged to eat three meals. Could you please tell me what it is about Jews and our obsession with food?
Well, Adrian, I'm sure you know about the story about the student who was asked by his teacher to describe Jewish history in 10 words or less.
No.
They tried to kill us. We won. Let's eat.
Gosh, it sounds like our family meals growing up. Oh, yes. That is every holiday, isn't it?
Something like
what
that. Not exactly.
Okay, so what is that? Well, why is that?
It's not so much that we're obsessed with food, Adrian, but sometimes people associate religion with spirituality. And for spirituality, many mean to separate themselves out from the material physical world. So we assume that religion demands from us to achieve a higher plane, a transcendent plane outside of the physical world.
Yeah, but food is a physical thing, isn't it? Very
exactly.
Physical, right?
And the Torah and Judaism is telling us we weren't created to be angels. There are lots of angels around. An angel is a spiritual entity without any physical being.
Mm-hmm.
We're human beings. We're a soul that's connected to a body. And while we're in this world, we're meant to make the most out of this world and perfect the world. And one of the things that we confront most with is food.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are so many eating disorders in our culture today. It sort of seems symbolic of how far afield the physical and the spiritual have split. So is that why we keep kosher, for our soul or for our body?
Well, you know, we have to ask ourselves, and Rabbi Weinberg, who founded Eish HaTorah, is very fond of asking this question to almost everybody who comes by his door, is, are you eating to live or are you living to eat?
Well, I think, but don't you think, though? All right. Sorry,
well, everybody's going to answer. Well, I'm not living to eat. I'm not working my whole work week to save up enough money just to go out for dinner, and that's what life is all about. And everybody will agree that we eat, we need food in order to live.
But we want it to be pleasurable.
Absolutely. But the idea is, how can I be involved in the physical world,
mm-hmm,
and use the physical world to achieve a spiritual experience? And that's really what I feel is unique about Torah and Judaism, is that we want to be intimately involved with the physical, yet not be consumed by the physical. We
okay.
don't want to get lost in the physical. So if we go back to the Garden of Eden story, Adrian, you'll recall, what's the first mistake that humanity made?
They ate something from a tree.
That's it.
Okay, so we're eating our way back to the garden, yeah?
Something like that, actually. You're not too far off. You see, we were created and put into a Garden of Eden. Eden means pleasure. Garden of Eden means the Garden of Pleasure,
oh,
Garden
I didn't
of
know
Delights.
That. Okay.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the word pardes, which sounds like paradise,
mm-hmm,
is really a fruit orchard, a tree orchard. And we were meant and we were put into a place where everything would be ready for us, for our pleasure. Didn't really have to work too much to take the fruit off the tree,
right,
and eat it. However, we were really here to be spiritual beings and not be distracted by the physical. And the pleasures that we're given are there to teach us something about the Almighty, the creator of the universe that gave us all these beautiful pleasures.
Okay.
And each perfect and beautiful thing that we see in the world is an opportunity to appreciate the perfection of the Almighty of God.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that the world serves as a mirror of God rather than God being the mirror of the world? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not exactly sure what you mean by that. It's very deep, Adrian. But
that's not so deep. It sounds to me like you're saying that every beautiful thing, every food we eat, all of that is a reflection of God.
It's a projection. We would say it's a projection of God's
perfection
into the
world. Okay, what does that mean?
The world.
I'm lost.
Well, if God is the infinite being, by definition, an infinite being lacks nothing, and that infinite being lacking nothing, from our point of view, we say is complete or whole, can't lack anything. So we call that perfection.
Okay.
And anything that we perceive in the world that has some kind of a relative perfection, a perfect apple,
mm-hmm,
When you see that perfect apple, and there is an objective aesthetic experience, people get lifted. You see a beautiful painting. You see, you hear a beautiful harmony on a violin.
True.
It lifts us. And the reason why that's lifting us is because from a Jewish point of view, that's a spiritual experience, a transcendent experience. Every time we encounter perfection, it's an opportunity to appreciate some aspect of God's perfection. In human terms, if you're a perfect mom, your perfect momness is going to manifest itself in that beautiful place setting and the way you prepared that dinner. The perfect momness is going to manifest itself in the behavior of your children, that they've learned it from you. So when I see your children behaving in such a nice way, that's a manifestation of your perfection as a mom. When I see the beautiful meal, that's a perfection of you as a mom. If you're knitting a scarf, that's a perfection of you as a perfect knitter. So the same thing with the Almighty's world. Every time we encounter perfection, we can learn something about the Creator.
Okay, so let's go back to the apple.
Back to the food.
All right.
So now, are we eating the apple for its own intrinsic essence? Is there something intrinsic about the fruit or the food? Or is the food there as an opportunity to connect me to God, teach me something about God? I can look at the meal on your table as, oh, isn't that a great meal? Let's eat it and forget about you totally.
Right.
Or if I was your child, I could sit down at that meal, and before I start eating it, I could think and say, Mom, you're the best.
Oh, my gosh.
You're the best mom. Mom, you just made everything that I love, and it's so flavorful.
I'd love that.
And you put the right – you put that curry on that I love on the rice. Mom, oh, you're the best. Can I start now? Can I have some – can I start the meal? And you say, son, go ahead, enjoy. I just made it all for you.
Whoa.
Right?
Okay, I'm hearing this, yeah.
Or the kid could just sit down and find the food on the table and gobble it down and say, great, now I can go and do whatever I want. Yep. And you sort of sit there and there's no relationship with your kid. So the Almighty gave us this beautiful world for us to enjoy, but to appreciate and understand who God is, how much He loves us, and how we can learn to be like God as well. Now, the mistake in the Garden of Eden was eating, precisely going against God's will. God said, don't eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. You can eat from any other tree, but from this tree, don't eat from it. Because if you do that, you're disconnecting from me. You're going to choose your own mortality instead of the immortality that comes along with a relationship with me.
Okay, can we try and I need you to put that into...
Put it back into Shabbos?
Put it back into a way that I can understand with maybe the parent and child example.
Yeah.
Okay, if I tell my children, don't eat that cake that's sitting on the counter.
Right.
And they go ahead and they eat it anyway.
Right.
I'm disappointed and I'm hurt. I'm angry, but does that disconnect them from me?
Sure. Anytime somebody asks you to do something and you ignore it, you're harming the relationship. You're not destroying the relationship. You're disconnecting.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Go on.
You're disconnecting. It's not all or nothing.
Okay.
But in that particular instance, they've decided to ignore you and they've lost the opportunity to appreciate what you did for them.
Okay. I get that.
Okay.
Okay.
So now, if we get back to Shabbat, mm-hmm. and you asked about why are we eating so much on Shabbat, what we're trying to do in this world that we're in when we're not in the Garden of Eden anymore is to fix that mistake. So one of the key areas of not losing God consciousness in our life is going to be related to food. It's going to be our biggest challenge almost.
Mm-hmm.
It could happen in all areas of our life. It could happen in how I'm doing business. You know, am I thinking about being godly when I do business? Am I thinking about being godly when I'm playing golf? But certainly eating is so much an intimate part of our life that we're confronted with it all the time. And therefore, there are going to be a lot of rules and regs available to us. I wouldn't say binding us, but available to us to stay focused.
But kosher food isn't necessarily healthier. I mean, you can get kosher junk food.
That's correct. So there are going to be two aspects of shlemus, of perfection related to eating. One is to be healthy so I can be the greatest person I can be and do the most good I can in the world. And second is connecting to really what God's will is. So God's will is He wants me to be healthy, but God's will is also, if, let's say, I shouldn't be combining meat and milk together. So there are really two aspects, and there's going to be two aspects to virtually any commandment as well.
Okay.
What it does for me, and it really just is a manifestation of God's will and my relationship with Him. So when I sit down to my meals on Shabbat, what am I really trying to do? I'm trying once a week to transcend, to step back out of my involvement so much with the physical world and reconnect with God,
mm-hmm.
having that God consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm using the opportunity of this meal to relate and think to God. So part of the Shabbat meal is not just the food. The oral tradition tells us that since the temple was destroyed, what replaces it for us temporarily is our table.
Mm-hmm.
The table becomes our altar. So you might ask, how is our table like the altar in the temple? Because what was the altar in the temple all about? They would bring these animal sacrifices or meal sacrifices, meaning bread offerings,
mm-hmm.
and sacrifice them to God. So what does sacrifice mean? It's a bad word. In English, it's sacrifice. It feels like I'm giving up something. But in Hebrew, it's called korban.
Right.
Korban, to become close, from karov.
Oh.
So the opportunity of bringing a sacrifice to the temple was an opportunity to reconnect and feel close to God. How did I do that? I brought something that was very physical and material that I could use for selfish ends. And I bring it to the temple and I put it on the altar, dedicating it to my relationship to God, meaning I'm acknowledging everything comes to God and I'm connecting it back to God.
So it's symbolic. It's not like in pagan tradition where people would sacrifice things because they thought their God was hungry or needed to eat. Is that what
exactly.
you're saying?
I can't give anything to God. God's an infinite being.
The
opportunity of korban, to become close, a sacrifice, is for me to regain my focus that I'm dependent upon the infinite being for everything that I have.
You know,
my shelter, and I'm doing a physical act to make a very strong imprint in my mind that that's the case. I take the best of my crops. I take the firstlings of my flock, and I bring it to the temple to realize this is not something that I did with my own hands. This is a gift. The miracle of life, of cell reproduction, of a new calf being born, that's all a gift from the Almighty. No matter how hard I worked in tending the flocks and plowing the fields and fertilizing and watering, in the end of the day, it's still a gift from God, and I have to acknowledge that. So that reestablishes my relationship. On Shabbat in particular, you know, we do that with every meal. Before we sit down and eat, just like I gave the example of your kids, we want to sit and acknowledge where it came from before we start feasting. We mm-hmm. do that every day of the week. Particularly on Shabbat, we make it much more festive because we understand God wants everything for our pleasure, and we put a beautiful tablecloth and beautiful table setting and really appreciate the bounty that the Almighty gives to us. But we stop beforehand and we say our blessings beforehand. But the rabbis say that what makes our table into the altar,
mm-hmm.
a replacement for the altar, is really it's not the bread that we put on the table that we add salt to like they did with offerings in the temple
mm-hmm.
when they gave sacrifices. It's not the saying the Kiddush and the wine that they would have used in the temple as well. You know what the rabbis say turns our table into the altar in the temple?
Tell me.
When you have a guest at your table.
Really?
How does the guest turn your table into the altar?
Tell me.
Well, if you think about it, animals have to eat. The animal side of ourself has to eat at least twice a day, in the morning, in the afternoon, or the evening.
Uh-huh.
We have to eat two times a day as an animal to live.
Right.
When we sit down at that Shabbat table and there's bread and there's meat and there's vegetables, well, we'd be eating that as an animal. So how do I turn my meal into a spiritual experience? What's the one thing at my table that I don't need to exist as an animal? Well, it's counterintuitive as an animal to invite somebody to share your food.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
Right? And not only that, it's the one thing at my table I don't need in order to satisfy my body's needs for food, for sustenance. And what the guest is there for is for spiritual sustenance. And we invite them to discuss words of Torah, share words of wisdom. And therefore, I'm showing that the food at my table is there really as a spiritual opportunity, not as physical. And that's what makes it into the altar.
Ah, that's fabulous. Thank you. You know, I'm just thinking quickly. I spoke with Rabbi Zauderer, and he talked about how single people need to know that families want guests at Shabbos, that they don't have to be on their own. And that completely ties in
to
what he was saying.
I would suggest if there's a single person out there, invite people to your house. You don't have to always be the one that's being invited out.
True enough.
Makes your home a spiritual place by inviting a guest. Now, I just want to add one last thing about on Shabbat. On Shabbat, we have three meals. Mm-hmm. During the rest of the week, we'd normally have two meals. I don't know, in North America, sometimes we'll have three, but usually breakfast, we sort of it's on grab and run.
Mm-hmm.
But we're told to have three meals on Shabbat. So why do we have the third? And the third meal is called what? Do you know what it's called?
Shalashudas.
Shalashudas. That's a slurring together of two Hebrew words called shalosh su'udot.
Right.
And it's called three meals.
Right.
Usually people say shalashudas is the third meal of the day. And the rabbis say, no, this is three meals. So what does it mean that one meal is three meals? So if you ate the first Friday night dinner with the brisket and the gefilte fish and the chicken soup and the challah and the dessert, and then you get up the next morning and you come down at the village shul and you go to Kiddush and they have more cholent and kugels and cakes and cookies, and then you go home for lunch and you bring out more gefilte fish or some sole and you have some whatever you have and more chicken and a big meal. Well, 5 p.m. on Saturday afternoon, what's the last thing you feel like doing?
You don't want to eat.
Don't feel like eating. But it's a mitzvah to eat that meal. So rabbis say when I sit down for that meal, when I'm not eating because I'm hungry, I'm not an animal. My animal side doesn't need it anymore. I'm only doing this for a spiritual reason because I want to connect to God. When I eat that third meal, it's demonstrating to the Almighty that the first two meals were not for my own gluttonous self-pleasure. It was also to fulfill the mitzvah as well. So that one meal implies all three meals are spiritual experiences.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're welcome.